Are there questions or anything to say? So, anytime, interrupt me. So, I'd like to continue from yesterday, where we're still playing with this phrase, trust your life, which really means recovering or uncovering, discovering a natural connection and flow and movement that is with aliveness in your own experience, in your own language. In part of the Tao Te Ching that I read yesterday, if you want to be given everything, give everything up. Our lives ask us to do this every day. If you want to be given everything, give everything up. And we tend to take it as being given second prize. If you want to be given everything, give everything up. We would like to be given everything, so we're pointing towards the everything. With lots of energy or with a little energy, or we kind of give up but don't quite give up. If we would really give up, then that flow would happen where giving up. Everything is given. But we don't also quite give up. We don't also quite get desperate and hopeless. So, just a small example, just now walking here to the yurt for the talk. There's the river, and there's my memory of seeing otters in the river, little ones. And there's me knowing I love otters and I love their movement and their seeming playfulness. And I saw a movement in the water that was otter-like. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. And then I found myself pointing towards the ripple in the river, wanting to see an otter. And do you understand? It's okay or too fast? I can summarize so in such a simple way. Walking to the hall, I wanted to see an otter. How do you say otter in French? Lutre. I love lutre. And luckily, I can tell you that through experience and through practice, there is some benefit. So I noticed myself in that pointing towards the wave. That reminded me of otter, reminded me of my love of otter, and awoke a wish to see an otter, and then a pointing towards trying to get otter out of water. And the disconnected feeling now, through experience and practice, is so familiar. And even then, if I would see the otter, because I wanted to see the otter, even that, I know it's still disconnected. It's not actually, it's exciting, because it seems to mean something about me. Life loves me, I'm special. I wanted to see an otter and I saw an otter. That game. And luckily through practice and experience, another movement can start to happen, that I notice I'm pointing in a disconnected way, trying to get something to confirm my goodness. And then instead, noticing that disconnection, falling back into, whether we call it myself or otter, or love of otter, laughing at this trying to get, and then laughing again, a much more fun laugh, landing in otter, landing in, what I love about the otter is this. And just being with my love of the otter, even without seeing one, is much better. For me, it's good. And it's whether it's me good, otter good, God good, world good, it's good. So we have the chance on retreat to, we could call it listen. To goodness, listen to aliveness, listen to ourselves. We don't listen to ourselves out of habit. When we listen to ourselves, we try, okay, let me listen to myself. Jaya told me to. We're trying to get something out of listening. There's a lovely story about Mother Teresa of Calcutta about listening that some of you would have heard me say before. I love the story. She was being interviewed by a journalist who had a good question for her. The journalist asked, "How do you pray? What do you do when you pray?" Pray. And she said, "I listen." And you can almost feel and hear the journalist then licking his or her lips about what I can ask now. Mother Teresa, when she prays, she listens, apparently to God, apparently. What does God say? What does God say when Mother Teresa listens? What does God say to, by the way, we have two rock stars, God and Mother Teresa. And one of them is listening. What does God say? And Mother Teresa says, God also listens. Nothing is said. Listening to listening. Or she doesn't say, listening together to life. I wonder what question the journalist could follow that with. What could you say next? Because it's a sweet story and it's a gentle kind of story, but also it's shattering. It's actually a devastating statement. The not-to-ness. Even in a kind of dualistic tradition, where there's the devotee and there's the god. If you want to be given everything, then give everything up. It does partly mean that we do have everything already. We already have. But our definition of who we are changes in that. So, quite a number of us in the room are at a point in our lives where there's a lot of unknown. Actually, we can say, everyone in the room, there's a lot of unknown, but some of us are in a situation where it's really obvious, it's really in the face. So partly that can mean that we had our way of going along, and it was okay, or it was good, or it was bad, whatever it was. We had our way of going along, and then something happened to end that. And so whatever way we were going along, that was a way to do something with our energy. Good, bad, indifferent, mixed, probably. We're going along. And luckily, every once in a while, life will make a pause so that we have one more chance again to take our lives as our lives. So we're not just on this retreat to have a good retreat and get something out of the good retreat. But we're on retreat to take our lives into our care fully, knowing there's not so much we can do also. But that's no reason to abandon our lives. But it's a very tender place. Exactly a tender place. To fully accept this is our life as it is. And there's some things that we can change. We have some influence. Sometimes. But mostly, what really matters is that we take our lives. Now. That kind of the manner of influence is by presence in our lives. And also, when we can, connecting to the goodness that we already have, that already belongs to us. And just because that goodness is ungraspable, we can't catch it, we can't buy it, we can't control it. We can't make it up. We know the difference. When we make it up, we make up goodness. What's that like? It's good and it's not good. And when we're just in touch with goodness that's already here, that no one can buy, that no one can also give, but it is given already. knowing the difference between those two kinds of good. Where we think we're in control and where we know we're not. Where we think we made it or we have to make it or we have to keep it up, and where we know we just received and receive fully, humbly, with gratitude. And so listening into your aloneness and your connectedness in this life. Your aloneness and your connectedness. Listening in and not expecting words, but feeling what could be guidance? What could be a leading edge? From our experience, already we know that what isn't the leading edge is that pointing towards wanting to get. And it's also not to pretend that we don't want it, that we don't love it, whatever it is, an otter or a cigarette or whatever. So yesterday we talked about the partial and the whole. If you want to become whole, let yourself be partial, or let it be partial. Part of what that means is whatever is happening, whatever specific, so therefore limited situation in the mind, with the body, around, inside, there are always specific things going on. It's very alive and very specific. Each sound and each thought and each feeling and each moment of body. Being fully with that specific aliveness does bring us back home to the wholeness that can include that specific without trying to buy my life through the specific, without trying to put my happiness on it. My happiness lives here. And my happiness enjoys certain things. And also enjoys, actually, our happiness. This is something you haven't been taught, probably. But our happiness that lives here, it enjoys what's easy. But it also enjoys the challenge. When it's not an unnecessary kind of false, just to prove something, challenge, a difficult day, a disruption. There is something in us that loves that. I remember the first time I really saw this, I was new to meditation. It was the first year or just second year I was meditating. And I was volunteering at a meditation center. And there was a meeting of the teachers or someone. And there was someone facilitating the meeting, and it was very hot and very intense, and a lot of sparks were flying. And people were, when they came out for lunch and dinner, they were really mostly overwhelmed. But the woman who was facilitating that was so fired up to really get to the bottom of what's going on here. She was energized by it. When we would be trying to bring harmony among various fairly public figures, etc., it could be easy to want to get something, to want a certain result. And then sort of all is lost when we're driven by the expectation. But when we're in the kind of liveliness of the situation, even when it's charged and difficult, it's like our skin is receptive for the osmosis. Maybe it's the similar word in French.
Osmosis.
Osmos?
Osmos. Osmos.
More beautiful in French, I find.
Osmosis.
Of the life energy. So yesterday I talked about feeling for something that's got freshness and space even when there's contraction or even when there's opening, and that our life isn't just that open and contraction story, that up and down story. But even more so, that space of freshness gets refreshed by receiving the partial as it is, the contraction as it is, the opening as it is. Not as news about myself, not as a story. And so what does not lead us well is the storyline, any storyline. Sometimes, as an emergency remedy, we need to replace a negative storyline with a positive one. Good. It's an emergency. Go for it. But don't stop there. Know that you can feel in your being, this is temporary, this is emergency measure, this is not sustainable, to hold up a happy story. Okay, so we do need to do that practice of when we notice the attack on ourselves inside, blaming of oneself, criticism, it happens. We can reverse the statement in our mind. We can go to the trouble and say the opposite. Say what does need to be heard in our mind. So when the voice says you're not good enough, for example, then what would be your other statement? What do you need to hear? What needs to be heard? Anyone?
Well, that you're good enough.
You're good enough, okay. And also you're good. And also you're enough. It's good when we turn it, that it doesn't stay, it doesn't have any flavor left of that put down. So we can start with good enough, but it still has a flavor of just good enough. Mm-hmm. And so we can play with all. We're good and we're enough and we're good enough. It's good enough. And then it has a different flavor. It's good enough. But when we feel and we notice that that doesn't actually reach that deeply, it does help and it is needed, but it doesn't go so deeply. Have you noticed that? It helps, it's good, but it doesn't go deep enough.
Have you noticed?
Have you noticed that it's good, it's worth doing, but it's not enough? So one way we can play with it is, you're good, I'm good, there's goodness. Inescapable, there's goodness. There's enoughness, it's enough. The words need to be heard, that's needed. And more is needed, something. And what the more is not something that we can direct and point towards and get. And that's because it is already very natural, so it's just a discovering. So the way that those words resonate, maybe shake you, maybe give relief, you are good. There's goodness in you. You can't escape your goodness. You can't escape your enoughness. And it is enough, there is enough. And you're good enough. In the relief or the being shaken by that, something opens and we feel that that statement, those words resonate in our depth. And then how does that depth move you? What inspiration comes from there? What do you suddenly remember you used to do as a child? Or is it just a certain kind of stillness that doesn't need to do anything? So that's the leading edge. And it sounds like not doing, and there is a very important area that is a not doing. But there's quite a lot of doing to allow that crack to come into our experience. It's there. The depth is already there. The goodness is there. But to let the crack reach all the way up into the head. Krishnamurti at one point was keeping a kind of diary. He was writing some daily experiences, and it's interesting so far what I'm reading. It's mostly around the morning and the evening light. And he just goes on and on in amazing language about the clouds and the light and just before the dawn and this whole rich description, or the light as it's fading. And the way it touches things. And then, without any bridge, he'll just talk about the clouds and the stillness and the... Without any bridge, he'll describe his experience. Maybe of stillness and silence. Or maybe of one time he was walking along and there was a woman walking along in a sari, an Indian woman. And he felt two things in her, simple walking along. One was this presence of great sadness that was just there and nothing to do about it. It was there. And then there was also the way he felt her feet kind of joyfully full of aliveness walking along the ground. There were these two aspects. He just describes that. And then he finds himself completely gone. He's not there. It's just her walking along. And he said, it's not like sympathy or compassion or empathy where there's still two people. Me feeling her, me feeling compassion for her, or me inspired by her. There was no one but her, he said. And he even describes how it took a while, even though she turned off and went another way, that to find himself again, so to speak. And then it came, a feeling of otherness again, hitting him like. Or another experience that sounds the opposite, an experience of what he calls the otherness, which is, again, it's almost the same, but a feeling of... the machinery of the brain, the feeling and the emotional feeling and thinking, just being still and just leaving room. And a quiet. And he talks about a happiness that the words can't touch, that is meditation. We could say being present in another way. Being so much myself that myself isn't. Myself as I know myself isn't. And then the way he describes it, he'll say beauty, the beauty of it. And it's partly, there's the landscape and the weather and the light and the clouds and the quality of the air and maybe the valley and the snow peaks. And one time he was driving along and just the valley, the openness of it took over, and he found that the car went backwards, and he found that the car went and stopped. He wasn't there. But there was enough of him there to drive the car and to back up and to turn and to park. But so lightly that it was as if not there. So he talks about the beauty. And we can play with that also here, being allowing ourselves to be touched by beauty of any kind. It doesn't need to be the valley and the snow peaks. But we do have beautiful light morning and evening here. Morning, evening, and nighttime are the things that I noticed him speaking of, and I also recommend as good meditation times, morning, evening, and nighttime. So, but he talks about beauty, life, and death as inseparable. And not just that the body could die anytime, as we've been told. We don't really believe, but we've been told. But this kind of cessation that he's describing his experience of. So how now, with the way our mental, emotional living goes. It takes up a lot of space, mostly, thinking and emotional feeling. And we can leave room for other kinds of feeling. So when I talk about feeling, I'm usually not talking about emotion. But for example, feeling the quality of the time of day, feeling tuned to the quality of the light, or feeling tuned to the quality of the sounds at a certain time. For example, sometimes we can feel afraid of getting over our emotions, so to say. So getting free from the domination of emotional reaction. We're afraid of that because we think life would be so boring. People actually do say this sometimes. They think life would be boring without that. But we don't have another word in English, so the word, and I was happy to find just this morning Krishnamurti saying the same thing, using the same word. I was like, yes. Feeling, not as an emotion, but as a whole realm of experience that's so rich, and it leaves room for spiritual experience as well as simple appreciation of beauty, of goodness, of enoughness. And I think it is that it does go along with, as we could practice dropping into enough. Even when the machine is hot and busy, enough, good. Maybe then it's a bit easier to feel and to develop our feeling. It's quite the opposite of what we would expect. When emotion is less dominant, the richness of the goodness can come across and be nourishing, whereas most of the emotional experiences we have aren't nourishing, mostly. So even love as an emotion compared to love as a feeling, the emotion would tend to be a bit more into the bargaining, trying to buy happiness and confirmation tendency. A tendency to be running. The feeling of love is nourishing. The first day here, I went jogging. And I happened to hear during lunchtime someone mention something about a black and white dog with a red eye. And I was talking to someone else, so I didn't. But it came into my ear, a black and white dog with a red eye that's around. And it seemed to be mentioned in a friendly way. That's all that came in. It came in. And I went jogging and I turned to go to the forest just along this side driveway. And there was a black and white dog with a red eye who, when he saw me coming, or she saw me coming, jumped up happy to come along. And I tried to get it to not come along, but it came. Because to get to the forest, in case you haven't done, I highly recommend that you do it. In case you don't know, you go up the driveway and you take the first right. Once you go out the gates of Le Moulin, you go immediately right. And then you hit the highway and you go again right. And it's not so easy to see this year, but after about 50 meters maybe, there's a curve on the highway and there's a little way to get into the forest there. And then if you go another maybe 15 meters through the brambles, then it's like nice paths that are mown, like cut low, so you can walk easily. It's very nice. So, but to get there, there's the highway and the dog without a leash, and I thought I got it to go another way, but I was in the forest, nicely running along, enjoying my aloneness, and I hear, here she is, here he is. Which in the forest is fine. It didn't eat any birds or whatever. It was okay. It tried. But then we come back out, and we have the highway again. And I don't understand, because the dog has a collar. So it seems that it has a human somewhere nearby, maybe, or somewhere. But the dog doesn't seem to get the highway thing. The dog thinks the highway is for the dog. And there I was, I just arrived, so, and I'd only been speaking English so far, so I'm speaking English to the dog. Come. Going farther into the middle of the highway. And of course, then it happens, here comes one car, and I'm like, come! And here comes another car. It was fine. They slowed down. They probably think it's my dog, yeah? Which is the point of my story. I'm near the dog, it must be mine. What are you doing on the highway with a dog without a leash? No. And suddenly I remembered to speak French to the dog, and then it understood. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Oh. So this is like us with our brains, with our thinking and emotion. It's somewhere nearby, so it seems to be ours. And we also think it's ours, and other people also think that we should have a leash on the dog. And we try to tell it what to do, and it does the opposite. And then sometimes we get an inspiration, and we find the way to speak the language that the brain wants to hear. Viens, viens, viens. Oh, okay. Sometimes it's easy. So this whole project of thinking and emotion and me, if it could be just one more thing that we receive, one more thing that's happening, like the sound of the river seems to go on most of the time, and we know it's not mine, even though it's in my experience, that would be considered something. I don't know what the specific, maybe psychotic, there would be a label for that. We'd be diagnosed if we claim the sound of the river as mine. And it's considered normal when we claim the sound of the mind as mine. But it's actually, why? And it does help a bit when we realize it's not me and it's not mine. So it can also say what it wants to say. It's not listening to me. Maybe I won't listen to it. I'll listen to something else that also wants to listen. Sometimes. And other times we can really get to the bottom of what's the pain that's driving this whole project, this whole machine of me. So sometimes the movements of the mind, so even the mind when it's criticizing you, unfairly. It's blaming you too much. Even if it has a point, like the way it's getting the point across is too much, too hard. Sometimes that self-hurting at the bottom is a wish to protect, to defend. And so sometimes we can get right down to the bottom of the wish to protect and the wish to defend. And stay there. It might be really tight, it might be really hard to stay, but stay there long enough. And staying there long enough can only happen when there's an inner atmosphere of friendliness, kindness, gentleness, playfulness, and good enough. Not so much pressure or expectation. Staying long enough that the project drops as a setup. From the beginning, this project will fail. Trying to protect through aggression. Blindly, without actually knowing what I'm protecting or with what. So we accept this will be a failed project. We don't need to go there. And then we're a bit loose. And there's a kind of okayness is available. Energy is available. Creativity also. Not mine. Are there any questions yet, or anything to share or comment? So maybe I'll save Gautam for tomorrow and Kabir for today. Kabir was a poor man who sang truth. He lived in India about maybe 500 years ago. And this translation is by someone named Arvind Krishna Mehrotra. He says, I'm waiting for the ferry. Kabir lived in Varanasi by the Ganges River, where it's pretty big. And a ferry is a boat that takes you across the river. So he says, this is just his symbol, his image in the song. He would often be weaving and singing at the same time. And other times he would be sitting to give teachings, and he might sing a teaching, or he might say, I'm waiting for the ferry, but where are we going? So this feeling of needing to bridge a gap, get across the river, get to the other side. And we want to find the boat that's going to take us across. So today I'm asking us to feel what would be that good leading edge across. Or what would be the good leading edge, rather, here I am facing a river and another side over there. I'm facing a gap. What is appropriate in that situation? So what usually happens is we wait for the ferry. We wait for the boat. And sometimes we might ask, but where are we going? So we might have found that even the self-criticism was somewhere a twisted version of self-defense or protection. Trying to make sure we do it right so we don't get hurt, for example. But meanwhile hurting us. Where are we going? And is there a paradise anyway? Is there a paradise anyway? Is there heaven? Is there something better? Is there a promised land? So, is there protection? Besides, Kabir says, what will I, who see you everywhere? He's talking to God, his best friend. Or we could even say, he uses the syllable Ram, which happens to be the name of a god, but he really just talks about the syllable Ram, and he repeated that syllable, Ram. Besides, what will I, who see you everywhere, who sees that vibration of open heart everywhere, Ram? What will I, who see you everywhere, do there? So this is when we practice good and good enough, and then something makes us think maybe not good enough. It makes that whole thing comes back on, not good enough. And we sit back down in good enough and good enough. And we just ask, where's this boat going again? Where would that boat go if I would get on it, that not enough boat? And is there somewhere that it could take me that could be called heaven, that would be away from this pain? Is that going to take me away from this pain of not enough? And then what would I, who has enough and good enough here, what would I do there? I'm okay where I am, says Kabir. Spare me the trip. Ek Ram dekha sabhin mein, kahe Kabir man mana. Ek Ram dekha sabhin mein, in everything, sabhin mein, in everything. I saw one Ram. So just that simple, okay, simple, good, simple, enough, in everything. In contracted, in expansive, in up, in down. In rough and smooth. Kahe Kabir Manmana. As often is needed with translations, the translation goes one way. Spare me the trip. Kahe Kabir Manmana. Says Kabir, Kahe Kabir. Manmana. We could say it's like listen to your own mind. Take your own advice. Take your own experience in. Let the living quality in your own experience be absorbed. Let it come in. This is your life. And so we can feel less need for expectation. We can feel expectations lower. And that brings the best out. It brings the juice out. And we love the juice is good. It's enough. And good enough, which means we can get on with our life before being perfect. before being how we planned to be, before we try to get everything. We can fall into our life that has everything, that's not my life. May all beings live fully the unowned life. Freely given. And may we freely give ourselves to our practice and our lives in a way that brings about liberation for all.